morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I start today's program with a quote from Vietnam's patron saint, Ho Chi Minh. "Nothing is more precious than independence and freedom," quote, unquote. And now, something I wrote for my Once Upon a Time newspaper, the North Coast Times-Eagle, which yet might apply to avoiding Donald Trump's despotic vision of himself as America's, with a K, Caesar Führer. Things that touch the heart. And something I wrote, as I think I might have already mentioned, I start with a quote from Nelson Mandela. "A free press is the foundation of liberty." Forgive me for this, but I quote Thomas Jefferson. "The basis of our governments being the opinion of the people, the very first object should be to keep that right. And were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter." He wrote that in a letter to a friend during the time the Constitution was being formed. It has, of course, been quoted to the point of being a cliché, and I called it from a popular Sunday magazine. A few years later, he would disavow the statement if it was brought up. I quoted Jefferson not only because I chanced onto his thought. It is a guiding principle of newspapers and broadcast journalism, the so-called media that evermore dominates our lives and society, and in particular, small, underfunded, and poorly circulated First Amendment publications and limited-range listener-sponsored radio stations that continue against all evidence to believe that human beings ought, by right of birth, be free. Our freedoms seem to be only wishful lies, bedtime tales told by those we democratically select to Alka-Seltzer our minds of thought or responsibility. Reality is treated as event, which translates into what entertains. "Nobody seems to give a damn" is what everybody says about everybody. Almost everyone seems afraid of the period we are trying to live through. No one seems to know what to do, or worse, endorse apocalyptic visions. The law of parsimony is not helpful. The simplest answer is probably the wrong one. If God is dead, who is there but Homo Jones to believe in, the great 19th century idea that made the 20th a maelstrom of hubris and horror and still a question mark in the 21st? Everyone loves the idea of freedom of the press, radio, and television, and the internet, but most feel uncomfortable with freedoms they do not endorse, generally regarding them as sources of moral, economic, or patriotic decline of the nation. The November elections were conducted in the usual acid bath of verbal and political civil war between those who would engage debate and those who would restrict it, and we have elected our own Hitlerist Führer. Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution is even stronger than the First Amendment. "No law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right." Say that again. Every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right. Stripping First Amendment rights and freedoms is indispensable to undermining democracy especially its protections of thought and expression. The First Amendment has not prevented attempts to impose religious or political orthodoxy. The excessive repression of the McCarthy era ruined the lives and professions of many of the nation's best writers, artists, and teachers. Christian fundamentalists, in particular, have been attempting to ban books from schools and public libraries for decades, and other censorious groups demand control over the contents of school textbooks and suppression of everything from pornography to Mother Goose. The persistent attempts by government and groups of powerful elites to control public dialogue, particularly in matters of political and social behavior, has always been dangerous and usually the guise for authoritarian usurpation of the apparatus of communication. Realization of this led directly to the First Amendment. The First Amendment states simply and clearly that government has no right to interfere with freedoms of speech, press, or religion, or with public gatherings which are indispensable to political and personal liberty and are necessary to abolish if liberty is to be thwarted. The First Amendment guarantees freedom of speech and a free press, in the assumption that liberty survives only in an atmosphere of free and open expression of thought and opinion, no matter how diverse, uncomfortable, obscene, or absurd. Freedom to differ is not limited to things that do not matter much, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun wrote. That would be a mere shadow of freedom. The test of its substance is the right to differ as to things that touch the heart of the existing order, quote, unquote. The right to speak implies a responsibility to those who listen. A listener to free speech is free to tune out the speaker, but shutting up the speaker is quite a different matter. Then the listener is threatening the right of the speaker to speak, which it is not his or her right to do, no matter how uncomfortable, obscene, or absurd. As U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist wrote in a majority opinion regarding the defamation of religious evangelist Jerry Falwell, remember him, who was depicted in a Hustler magazine cartoon performing incest with his mother in an outdoor toilet, which tread on several taboos. The First Amendment does not only protect the reasonable, but also the outrageous. Controversy, that feared word, is the language of democracy, the robust dialectic of conflicting opinions. Without controversy, there is no dialogue, only obedience to command or directive. The only appropriate response to controversial or unpopular speech or ideas is public rebuttal, not censorship. Yet those who claim to rule in democracy's name continually attempt to enlarge their own powers by limiting the range of ideas and information necessary to engage in the argument of opinion that is indispensable to political and personal freedom. The assumption of freedom is that the average human being is intelligent and inspired by compassion, and that most people will think and act reasonably most of the time. The usual assumption of government is the common citizenry is unintelligent, primitive, and brutal, and must be shielded from its own perfidious nature. The tendency of government is to rule, and it is a parasite. Government must, by the implication or force of its sovereignty, feed upon and subtract the political liberties, rights, and powers of those it rules. It is the responsibility of the people to always contain the power of their government, which, without that restraint, will relentlessly take away power from the people. The U.S. government has too often usurped much power for itself, some of it for the betterment of the people, such as civil rights laws, but also much of it against the people, such as the rule of terror, secrecy, and doubt that characterized the Cold War and nuclear arms race with the now defunct Soviet Union. The idea of the authority of law is a recognition by most of us that a few of us will cheat, rob, murder, and otherwise make life uncomfortable for the rest. A majority desires protection from the psychopathy of an avaricious minority. For exactly the same purpose, to protect us from predatory or cruel government, the political freedom and power of the common citizenry has been made the law of this nation. Yet a government of the people is assumed to also be a government for the people, so it is entrusted to act in the people's behalf to prevent or correct the excesses of monopolistic and unprincipled private interests, which is in contrast to the current era of virulent capitalism. Former President Ronald Reagan was wrong when he said that a free government must be free from government. To remain at liberty, or at least preserve what remains of our liberties and eventually venture into a more just and compassionate climate, the influx and dissemination of information, ideas, and opinions are necessary. The problem is that it has been nearly sacred doctrine that an informed citizenry will act reasonably and with sound judgment. The reality seems that the vast bulk of information and data on virtually every conceivable and esoteric matter from everywhere in the world, at all times of day, every day, and the sheer volume of its variety, statistics, factoids, opinion polls, ideas, and perceptions that range from fantastic to meretricious, and reportage of events from births to wars is incomprehensible. At some point, the beleaguered brain overloads and shuts off. Public apathy is not accidental or the result of not having enough access to information. It is most usually the opposite, a premeditated response to a society awash in paper and verbiage. We know too much. It is this which confounds the believers of information as the temple of freedom. To call through the immensities of twaddle and drivel to discern what is pertinent, or work through the purposely misleading, might finally be too much to require or expect of a citizen. Suppression, after all, fires the wronged spirit. Gluttony buries it. There are currently as many forms of communication as there are groups of special interest using them. It would seem that half the stars at night are communication satellites orbiting Earth within the Clark Belt. Worldwide satellite transmission has dramatically changed radio television programming and access and provides with fiber optic cables, computer internets, and fax, instantaneous information everywhere on the planet. The proliferation of special interest groups, citizens groups, political action committees, even library boards, and soap opera fan clubs that publish newsletters, fanzines, micromedia videos, tapes, and newspapers, engage in political, religious, or business mass mailings, also advertising throwaways, own or syndicate programs on radio, television networks, and commercial internets. All of this print and visual babble saturates us with information, virtually all of it self-promotional, biased, and of questionable veracity. The growth of huge interlocking newspaper chains and entertainment networks nationally and worldwide has long made news gathering and reporting hostage to advertising and profit, and concentration of ownership threatens the diversity of independent media through which the public is presented multiple views and perceptions. Television, of course, changed everything. Without TV, a person has little to talk about with anyone. The vision television projects has been a prevailing, not to say pervasive, vision of our culture, even when it is criticized as a narrow, superficial, and self-serving distortion. TV is yet the defining edge. It represents, reflects, and is the cause of what we are and how we view ourselves through its one-way prism. More than any other medium or mode of communication, television has precipitated the question of who is in control of the information that assaults us through its flickering window, night and day, in an interminable stream of words and visions. The greater part of a century of radio TV advertising, during which a daily average of 70% or 80% of Americans passively accommodate outrageous commercial falsehoods, have probably eroded our capacity to recognize or critically evaluate truth. At some point, language is obscured, transposed from communication to promotion and transaction, from clarification to obfuscation and manipulation. Truth is not necessary, only the appearance of truth, or more pertinent, adhering to the principles of advertising. If a lie is told often enough, it is accepted as truth. Agreed upon fictions that masquerade as reality to distort and manipulate circumstances and are eventually recorded as historical certainty. A workable definition of information and the purposes it serves is necessary, whether it is a source of public dialogue and crucial to an open society, or if it should be privately controlled to reflect only certain ideas and points of view. A corollary question is if the use and dissemination of information should be treated as a business regulated by a relative few who seek profit from it. A.J. Leibling, who was generally dyspeptic about subordination of information, caustically claimed that a free press was available to anyone wealthy enough to own it. The trend is that mega corporations are increasingly in control of the information we receive and they influence political and legal decisions about its use and flow, such as a 1985 Oregon State Supreme Court ruling that corporations, which are classified as individuals under the law, cannot be investigated and reported about with great risk of libel suit. That ruling, which was against the Portland Weekly newspaper and favored a major bank, said essentially that while celebrities of the moment can be inexhaustibly exhumed in the media, institutions that affect the lives of millions are virtually sealed off from public scrutiny. Technology, in particular satellites, fiber optics, and computers, has enabled the immense growth of communications conglomerates that are instantaneous and global. Multinational corporations, which might be considered private governments that influence and often dominate public governments, are able to transmit and receive data to and from subsidiaries everywhere on Earth. They are also able to control and manipulate information pertinent to their activities, which gives them powers unanticipated by the framers of the Constitution, whose concerns were limited to the powers of reigning government. The basic idea of communication in the vast centralized societies of the current era is to profit from the self-interested reflexes of couch potato masses and to stimulate world markets. Rarely is education or libertarian stimulation given priority or airtime. Information presented to the American public is in the form of events, which is called news. Ideas and opinions in mainstream media are subdivided into editorial sections of newspapers or as commentary segments of radio, TV, newscasts. Most women and men in the news gathering business do not think of themselves as propagandists or ideologues. On the contrary, most of them earnestly attempt the improbability of objective and unbiased recording of events, incidents, facts, and sometimes account for ideas through opinion polls and random surveys. They try to treat the news, in the words of Gene Fowler, as history shot on the wing. But of course, they reflect the contemporary and cultural biases of their society and ultimately of the industry they serve. The media, an intertangled mafia of smoke and mirrors, to which truth is ephemeral, chimerical, and expendable, an item of profit and loss. The insidious aspect of the pursuit of objectivity as the cornerstone of modern journalism is that inevitably the form is used to disguise and project very partisan ideas and perspectives by those who manage and rule society and own the major media. The real purpose of the press or media is little understood, which is as much its own fault as it is from public skepticism and distrust. The people expect event and spectacle, which are ardently chronicled, and the infotainment mediocrity provides instant celebrity and fashion as instantly recycled and refashioned. But the central function of the press and media is to act as the public conscience and critical watchdog of authority, the cry of alarm when authority is exceeded or corrupt. The media must act as a forum and instrument of public dialogue and debate, presenting differing views, even as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, quote, expressions of opinion that we loathe and believe to be fraught with death, unquote. Above all, the press and media must be honest and open with its readers, viewers, and listeners. A free and open flow of information, regardless of ideology or opinion, despite the strenuous labor of separating truth from fiction, deceit, gossip, and obscenity, information from disinformation, is quite truthfully the only method of preserving what remains of our freedoms and the only chance to enlarge them in a turbulent world that is recoiling from the collapse of a morbidly tyrannical and static empire that claimed to be a dictatorship of the people. The First Amendment is unequivocal. Nothing shall abridge freedom of speech, therefore freedom of thought. It is our distinguishing ideal, unfortunately more in theory than actuality. Not our wealth or world power, nor our system of acquisition and consumption is as important as the inspired attempt to reverse history and make it possible for people to be equal and independent under laws of their own choice. Judge Learned Hand should have the last word. Liberty lies in the heart of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can save it, quote, unquote. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. I have recently read a quote from Hannah Arendt, who was a major contemporary critic of Adolf Hitler. Quote, this constant lying is not aimed at making the people believe in a lie, but ensuring that no one believes in anything anymore. A people that can no longer distinguish between truth and lies cannot distinguish between right and wrong. And such a people, deprived of the power to think and judge is, without knowing and willing it, completely subjected to the rule of lies. With such a people, you can do whatever you want. And that was from Hannah Arendt, a succinct description of the rule of Trump, who conceives himself as America's, with a K, dictator-in-chief, quite a leap from wartime draft dodger and criminal felon to commander-in-chief in perpetuity, though the term perp might be an apt description of Trump.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.